The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week 2019 title sponsor, Techstars. At the core, Techstars is a company founded by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. With more than 300,000 alumni and 10,000 mentors across 150 countries, Techstars is a worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. To learn more, go to techstars.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. This is the first of 20 interviews recorded in a pop-up backroom studio at Dojo 4 during the 10th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode 37 is Marcy Tucker, CEO and founder of 99Agree, a company dedicated to helping college students live, share, and get along with each other at the highest potential possible. Marcy and I talk about the growing need, and not just among college students, for roommate compatibility forecasting, how agreements transform communities, Marcy's perspective on the gap between the rhetoric and the real in the Front Range tech and startup community, and what roommates and Mars simulation have in common. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with 99Agree's Marcy Tucker. What do roommates and Mars simulation have in common?
They all think that they can get along. They feel getting along with someone else is just going to be really easy. So they underestimate. That's the word I'm looking for. They underestimate what happens when you're either in tight spaces or you think I can get along with anybody. And you actually find out you have some issues that you're, you know, I really like it neat and clean is really, really important. And when in the Mars simulation, that was what was so funny on NPR when they were talking about it, is that she said, you know, out of all the teams, it's not the competence around the tech or what they're doing. They just underestimate what it's like to really live with someone else. So these brilliant people come together, and that was the key surprise. Well, I worked in colleges and universities. And so in the past 25 years, I've worked with thousands of college students, and their roommate relationship, that micro community, has so much to do with their success. And it's one of the top five reasons students leave school.
This issue of roommate compatibility, is that sort of a new issue, or how has roommate relationship evolved?
Right. And so I take a different tack on it. I think, Joel, that's a great question, because most people approach it with matching. They think that, you know, if we can just get you with the right person, then the commonalities will carry through the relationship. And that just doesn't happen. There is evidence to suggest I will be more satisfied if I have someone who's similar to me. But the long term about how I'm satisfied with the overall roommate relationship, that doesn't bear the same fruit. So I entered it when I was dealing with all these roommate conflicts. And I'm like, how do you not know how to live with someone? And not that that's mean-spirited. I don't mean to say it that way. It's just, what is the skill? What is the energy that you need to have? What do you need to bring to the table that makes a roommate relationship more successful than others? And so we come into it with the happily ever after. So I don't care how you match roommates, you can do it any way you want. We're about forecasting. Here are some problems. So think of us like weather forecasters for roommate relationships. You already know where you are and who you're going to be living with, but it's what happens the rest of the time. You know, somebody said all marriages start out successful. It's living together afterwards that's the problem. And that's what it is with roommates. So we have them do a questionnaire. So it's first a self-reflection. What do I really think on a Likert scale of 6 points from, you know, really messy to really clean? Where do I fall? And then our magic in 99Agree is we compare those answers and we say, here's your common starting point. You're not really at the extreme of really messy or really clean. You're kind of here. And then we would ask students, you know, or people to say, well, come up with some norms. Know how do you live together? Like anybody who works with someone, you say, well, how do you work? And what you're trying to figure out is where the boundary is. Where am I going to step over the line? And I'm going to have a confrontation. We're trying to avoid confrontation. We're trying to avoid having someone say, I don't really like that. And that really wasn't fun. Because nobody really wants to get that. I mean, some people do. Some people are very like, I'm in your face and I'll be direct. But in our culture today, it has and continues to be very hostile. And so I'm trying to avoid being called out on issues if I can avoid that. So then we say, okay, so here's where you are. Here are what the norms are. So a norm for cleaning a room might be, we're going to pick up after ourselves. And you would think that that would be really basic. But if you've never had to do that, that is like coming up with Egyptian hieroglyphs. You know, they don't get it. They don't understand what that means until later. And then what they decide is, well, I can't live with anybody. And what we also know about today's population is 1 in 3 adults are choosing to live or doubling up in housing. So over 70 million people are having roommates because we can't simply afford to live on our own anymore. Housing prices are going up. So I can't afford to go out and get an apartment or a flat or whatever on my own. So I have to live with other people. And think about the amount of debt that the millennial generation has. Well, if I've got to pay a $2,000 student loan bill every month, and even though I might be earning $5,000 to $7,000, how can I do that and save? So roommate relationships and how we live together, I think, is incredibly compelling for those reasons. And that's why I got into it, is because it's so much a part of what people are experiencing.
And was there something that you experienced yourself that was part of the inspiration behind launching 99 Agree?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that, as we were talking here, it's like, well, where are you from? Well, I went to 4 different elementary schools, 2 different middle schools, high school, college, grad school. I've moved around a lot in my life. And very early on, say, you know, my formative years, K through 12, it's that there were always people who understood what the rules were. And when you're the new kid, you are constantly searching for how do I fit in? What's going on? What are the cues? And so you learn to read an environment. But you can fail at that miserably. You can be outed and you can be humiliated and you can have all of those negative things that are associated with school culture that aren't fun. And so, yeah, I bear a lot of those scars. And then when I was working at CU Boulder and I was working with college students who come in and they come from a wide variety of backgrounds. And so just because you think that, well, everybody grew up the way I did. And what I was finding with a lot of roommate conflicts was it just simply is 2 different places of orientation. Maybe I had an intact family and 2 parents and siblings. Maybe I didn't. And I'm not going to tell you up front what my issues are. I'm going to hide those things. And so the way we approach roommate relationships is we immediately say, you're going to trust each other. You're going to be very open with each other. There's a lot of trust. And what I know from my experience and what I was seeing from the students was that's not the case. You're going to have to work at it. And I'm not sure I want to trust you with everything. If I have a mental health issue, do you think I want to tell you that the first thing? Or if I'm going through my gender identity development, do you honestly think I want strangers? Because you're still strangers. So the security, the psychological security that we think is there just isn't in many cases. Now, it can be for some. And I don't mean to paint a picture that it's all this skewed because, yes, I love my tech and I love what I've come up with. You know, sure, any inventor, any founder loves that. What I'm saying is that it's more pervasive and on varying degrees, and that this feeling that we have or this overarching philosophy is that everybody will figure it out and they'll see the benefit just doesn't hold up to any kind of evidence-based data that I've been able to come up with. And the research that we've done on our tool and things, yes, there are some benefits. But anyway.
How has the roommate dynamic changed? Well, first of all, let me back up because you were talking about millennials with student loans and people needing to find roommates just because of economic demands today. So does 99 Agree work
not just with college students, but with anyone looking to
right. get That's into our vision
situation.
That's our vision, is that we started in the college space and positioning it to colleges and universities. And our next evolution is to get a mobile app so that anybody can use this tool with anybody that you live with, because the issues are the same. You know, you have to talk about the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I don't care who you are. That is not fun to talk about when you don't really know someone. And what we want to do is reduce the barrier to entry for those issues. And the other thing about roommate relationships is it could be one way. The way we do it now is we give you a piece of paper, or you can go online, Google, you know, 14 million roommate agreements, and it's all paper and it's online. And they say, well, you, Joel, tell me what you think. And so you tell me what you think. Well, I may or may not want to engage depending on how I feel about you, or you may or may not engage depending on how you feel about me. And so right now we're not going to talk about dating partners because right now neither one of us have that. But say 6 months in, I meet the love of my life, you meet the love of your life, and all of a sudden everything is shifted. And now we have a third, fourth, fifth roommate, and we never talked about it. And so what I hear over and over, whether you are an 18-year-old, a 25-year-old, a 35-year-old, is, well, we never talked about it, so I can't ever hold them accountable. I can't go back in. And I'm like, yeah, you can. Things are going to change over time. You know, when you think about your work world, you go in, you're onboarded, and somebody gives you periodic feedback to say, yeah, you're right, and course correct, or say, hey, we didn't expect this, or this kind of came up. Situations and the environment changes. So, you know, again, it's like the weather. Today it's sunny and beautiful here in Boulder, Colorado. Tomorrow could be rainy, it could be snowy. And you have to have different tools to be able to talk to each other about that. That's what we're trying to do, is in that space, help you understand that it's okay to go back in and talk. It's okay to give each other feedback, how you do it. Those are all teachable, trainable tools. It's not anything that certain people have access to. But if you've had very bad relationships, you're very hesitant to go back in because you don't really know how that other person is going to deal with you. So those are some things I think are important.
And so 99 Degree doesn't just help you find the compatible roommate, but also gives you the tools to
right.
develop and improve that relationship. And
actually, you know, we're not in the matching space. So you match however you want. You find someone through Craigslist, through whatever tool you use. We're about what happens afterwards.
Okay. Okay.
That's the space that we enter.
You said on your site that agreements are how we help each other to be successful and ultimately how we transform our communities. And I think that's interesting, and I want to hear your thoughts just on that alone. And then I also was thinking, though, mm-hmm. that agreements require honesty and transparency. And I was curious about how we make agreements in an age when misrepresentation, especially in political and corporate communications, and, you know, sort of tell me what you want to hear and I'll say it, runs rampant. It's become sort of the operating mode for a lot of people
right.
today. So what do you make of all of that?
that's quite a lot, Joel.
That's a lot.
Let me break it down into kind of a couple of points here. So one is, when we're talking about agreements, let me begin with that, because agreements are trying to find the commonality, and we give you the common starting point, because I agree with you, the polarity. If you take a position and I take something in opposition, in our culture today, it's very hard to find the common ground. So what we're starting with is, you get to reflect on what you believe before you and I ever talk. Then when we talk, we only talk about what we have in common. So I'm not talking about, I really need it clean, or you really are, you know, need it clean, whatever that is. We're talking about, oh, this is interesting. This is where we came. Here's what that corresponding rule is, or norm for the room. Do we like that? Oh no, let's edit it, change it. And all of a sudden, what I've seen every single time with people is it reduces that anxiety because my voice has already been taken into account. I don't have to argue with you about that. I already know that my voice is taken into account. And because we're roommates, I know there's going to be give and take. I do think that, you know, that hasn't changed over the years. What I think in the broader spectrum where I'm passionate is that if I can't talk about this with my roommate, how am I going to have the larger conversations about civility, about navigating some of these messy spaces? Because communities, that's the messiness. Your freedom ends where mine begins. And where is that? That's the, you know, what I call the penumbra. It's that shadow space between light and dark where you and I are having to navigate. And there aren't any rule books for that. You can go and talk to a lot of people, but eventually you find out for yourself, you know, what you believe, and then you know how to navigate that. The other thing I would say, you know, again, I come from an academic background. And so a lot of times I'm looking at theory. I'm saying, does this theory hold up? And what is the practice? So theory to practice is really important, that kind of praxis, if you will. There's a model called the community development model, and it talks about five stages of community. And the first one is acquaintanceship. And acquaintanceship we tend to think of as something that's not really important, but what acquaintanceship does is it sets the stage for psychological safety. So all those energizers and icebreakers and name games that you hate and you think, oh, what a waste of time. But what it does in a group, in any group consciousness, is it creates that psychological safety that you know my name or you know something about me and I know something about you. And so I begin to navigate that relationship a little bit differently. So acquaintanceship is the foundation. So the first thing that we have to do to engage in civility is to really understand, or not really understand, but it's more to understand what your lived experience is, what my lived experience is, and where are their common touch points, because that leads to the second part, which is communication. Communication is all about asking questions, being sincerely interested in someone. You know, that's from Dale Carnegie, or you could do Stephen Covey, seeking to understand, you know, first seek to understand, then be understood, all of those good things that we talk about, good listening behavior, so good communication. Those two things lay the foundation for trust. And that to me is what's being eroded, is we think we should trust each other at the outset. And actually, I think what is happening is we're so distrustful of each other, we're not communicating. And the foundation of good community is having good acquaintanceship. Good communication leads to trust. And it's the same thing I found not in the business that I do, but in the tech community itself. When I walk into a room and, you know, it's my first time meeting people, and I can feel whether they're judging me, whether I'm going to have a conversation. I can't tell you how many meetups I've gone to in the tech world where it's really hard to have the basic acquaintanceship. And so you wonder why people don't come out, or people are going into their different tribal groups, if you will, or, you know, their communities, echo chambers. It's because I just want to have a conversation, and can you talk to me? Or if I say something in communicating to you, like I was sitting at Denver Startup Week and I was at a table and the gentleman next to me was doing an app. And, you know, I said, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. I said, how do you think women will approach this? And that shut down the conversation on his side, because he's like, well, women don't think any differently than men. And I was stunned. I was like, oh my goodness. And I didn't mean to shut down the conversation. So when you start talking about these things and men beginning to think, well, why aren't more people of color or women coming out? It's, well, how inclusive in the conversation are you willing to be? That leads to trust. Can I trust you with the things that I'm talking about? Can you make those connections? And that leads to commitment, and that leads to community. So the five aspects are acquaintanceship, communication, trust, commitment, because then I show up, and then community. Oh, I feel, you know, a great part of this. And when you think about any group, you know, Joel, you've been a part of, there's been that very perhaps quick evolution. Or when you think, I don't want to be part of this group because something probably has been eroded there, and you have to work on it all the time. It's a constant evolution. And that's what I think a lot of times we're just not working on. And so in my corner of the world, the little piece that I want to do is having roommates be able to have that acquaintanceship communication and not have their trust eroded, that our larger community is should be mistrusted, because that's not the case.
Do you think that there's a particular sort of predisposition to being more or less trusting? Like, have you noticed people from a background of, say, you know, sort of traditional nuclear family versus somebody who is raised by a single parent and kind of had to be more independent growing up. I don't know. Is there like a stereotypical way for people to approach these relationships?
No, I think that it's, you know, particularly when I was at CU Boulder and I would have students that would come up to me who would feel very disengaged from the campus community. And you would ask them, well, what's creating that? Part of it is that they just didn't feel that they had a place to go. And then you connect them to other people and all of a sudden, oh, there are people who are like me. I can manage this or navigate it. And a lot of the times the people were very strong. They're very self-confident, but the community can send mixed signals. And the way the community does that is that in Ben Schneider's work, he's a researcher out of the University of Maryland, College Park, he talks about organizational climate, which is actually what you see. So when we talk about culture, that's the embedded beliefs and values. But the climate is what you and I have access to. So I'm looking at the behaviors that are expected, the behaviors that are supported, and the behaviors that are rewarded. So in a classroom setting or in a social setting, say, for example, in the tech community, if the behaviors that are rewarded are, hey, let's go out and have a keg of beer, and I'm not into that, then this community isn't for me. I'm not going to do a deeper dive. Even though people might be great, I just see, oh, you're doing something, and maybe that's not what I'm about. And yet everybody else who feels very connected to the community be like, oh my gosh, this is so great. Why wouldn't you do that? So that's that in-group, out-group behavior. And we also notice the policies, procedures, and practices. That's the structure of an organization. Who gets invited in? Who gets tapped on the shoulder? Who has to work harder? What's the structure? You know, I didn't realize when I came into tech that what I was doing was so different. I thought, I'm a rebel just like everybody else. And very clearly, there were messages, subtle and not so subtle, that maybe I don't fit the norm. And that's really disheartening because you found this community, and to think that even within the community, there are going to be people who have in-group and out-group behaviors and that kind of thing. So to me, I don't think you can actually look at that, because in one set of factors, someone might feel really connected. In another group, they may feel very disconnected. And then I think that's what leadership has to do, is understand, well, what are we creating and how do we ensure that the people who want to take advantage of what we've got are included in that? And what messages are we sending that they're not part of our group? You know, how do we do that differently? So I don't think you can really stereotype it. That's why I have some issues with the generational things too, where people say, oh, millennials are so, I'm like, no, you were like that when you were 30. You've just forgotten. Like when I work with 18-year-olds, they're wonderful. They're incredible. You've just forgotten what an 18 to 24-year-old is like, but that's my wheelhouse. That's what I do. That's what I studied.
And so to shift gears a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about your experience just in the tech mm-hmm. world, in the tech community. Really quickly, tell us your background.
So I have a higher education. My doctorate is in college student personnel administration, a PhD from the University of Northern Colorado. And I spent about 25 years in colleges and universities doing everything on the student affairs side of the house. So I supervised student activities, the Women's Resource Center, LGBTQ. I worked in housing. Was a property manager for a 678-bed facility at CU Boulder, was the customer relations and strategic communication manager for 7,500 students that live on campus. So really broad range to my way of thinking. Housing on any college campus is a moneymaker. So I felt like I had a good understanding of, you have to generate revenue, you have to be, you know, bottom line. And then in 2015, I had gotten a call from another university because I had been promoting this way of dealing with roommate issues because it has become so apparent on a campus. And so this colleague of mine said, you know, that the way you're doing it is actually how our students think about it when we did research with them. So can we have your software? And I said, as a matter of fact, I'm going to spin it out. So I spun it out not knowing anything, like, you know, okay, I've got a client, that'll be easy. I've got the software. And then you go into running a business.
Did you develop this software yourself?
I had a team. So in 2009, a student came to me who said, I'm having issues with my roommates. We developed the software, you know, a minimum viable product in 3 months, because he was a computer science background. He's like, oh, I can build this for you. It'll be really easy. And I had another colleague who said, you know, I really like this because nobody else is doing this. This is really innovative. Let's build this together. So we spent about 6 years building it on the campus. So it was unique to the University of Colorado Boulder. And then what I really liked about CU Boulder was they said, if you've got an idea, you can spin it off into a company. We really want you to do that. And is that what you want to do? And I said, could I do this? This would be great. And so those things aligned. Then you have to set up who your web developer is going to be and who your tech people are going to be and how the team is going to work. And that has been an evolution.
Were there any particular resources available to you through CU or just in the Boulder community itself that helped you get a leg up with launching Agree 99?
I would say some yes and some no. I think that in the tech world, this is what my experience has been, and I can only speak for me. You go out there and your immediate need is to serve the client. At that point, people are like, okay, you have to figure that out. You have to figure out the funding. You have to figure out how you're going to do this. You have to figure out the tools. People will tell you about, oh, well, if you pay, $3,000 to $7,000 or $10,000, you can go through an accelerator or something. I didn't really understand what that meant until probably 2 years into the process, what an accelerator, what a community meant. And there's a lot of, well, if you're not in this accelerator, it's really not worth it. There's a lot of judgment about who's in your corner, who's your team. There's a lot of judgment that goes on because I think it's a highly risky venture. And so people are trying to figure out, are you aligned with the right people? I didn't understand that. You know, really people don't talk, at least they didn't talk to me about it. They just kind of said, great, you're an entrepreneur, go for it. And you know, I had some hard lessons to learn as I went through the process. And at the same time, my husband had taken a job in Florida. So as I was spinning this off, I'm moving across from Colorado to Florida. And in a year and a half, I moved back to Colorado because his job changes to come back to Colorado. The nice thing about running a company like this is you can do it from anywhere. You know, you've got resources. But I think I expected that there would be more structural support or people who would say, okay, this is how you're going to line up the funding and this is how you're going to get the team. And unless you found that accelerator or someone takes a shine to you, it can be very challenging. And that also sometimes is disappointing because I think it leads me to feel that it's not the level playing field that merit. While yes, great innovative ideas are going to rise to the top, I don't always know that we all get the same chance to have the same shot. You know, I've done pitch competitions and you're going for, you know, one spot and everybody else is like, oh, well, it was nice to meet you. Bye-bye. And that's what makes me feel sometimes that the community is a little bit disingenuous with its support and the merit. Well, we gave you the opportunity, and if you didn't rise to the top, well, sucks to be you.
It's interesting. And has being a woman in this community, do you think played a part in that, or how has that experience?
I think that's put on me more than I'd like to think it is. It's not something I choose to put a lot of time and attention on. The reason I'm involved with women who start up that community is because when I would go into meetups, I just didn't feel people were speaking to me, even though I could relate to their experience or they could relate to mine. It was, you know, after in the social interaction, and it was just like it wasn't there. Whereas when I go to women who start up, everybody's interested in talking to me. I'm interested in talking to them. It feels good. So I don't know where that comes from. I show up for a lot of things. I feel, you know, I've tried to put my best foot forward. And at some point, you just get tired. You just get tired of saying, I belong here. When the meta message that you get picked up is, yeah, I'm not so sure because you're not really a techie. No, I'm not. I'm not a gearhead. I get that. And I can't stop that. I have this great idea. I want to work together. How do we do that? And that's what I bring. 2 years ago during Denver Startup Week, you got to pitch to angel investors. You got four to go to. And I thought, well, what's my success metric? And it was very, you know, mixed up. They, you know, it was just like random. It was like musical chairs, whoever you sat down in front of. So it wasn't a really good match. And I heard some people who said, oh, we got two out of four. That's great. And I thought, okay, well, that's a good metric for me. I don't know. And two people I pitched to had no idea what I was doing and thought it was a waste of time. And two people were like, I can help you. I like you. And all four were male. And I thought, well, this isn't bad. And then that was good, but it wasn't sustainable over the long haul. And you just have to find people who want to support you in that way. And I think it's really hard because, you know, ideas are a dime a dozen, tech companies are a dime a dozen. So it can feel like you're just one of many. And when I go into the Women Who Startup community, I really remember that it's about how do I feel? How do I want to make other people feel? How do I want to make these women feel when they've got an idea and they just sometimes want someone to say, it's a great idea. It's going to be a hard road. I can't solve it for you. No, nobody's asking for that. But how can I help you? How can I understand more about what you're doing and listen to you and not judge? Because that's happened to me too. You know, two words out of your mouth. I couldn't even have this long a conversation, Joel, with some people because they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if that's the culture, that's the culture. That's what I'm experiencing. I'm going to go where people are willing to sit down and say, okay, so explain to me how you're going to do this. Yeah, it sounds like it's really tough. How do you overcome that? You know, that's what I think these podcasts are. What we're all trying to figure out is how do you overcome the challenges that face us? We all have a unique path to how we're going to manifest our dream and our idea. And sometimes we're not going to be able to do it, or things go off the rails, or somebody doesn't do something. And that's painful, but we don't have to beat each other up for it.
Considering some of the, let's say, obstacles you faced in terms of getting support or just getting real feedback from people and advancing your idea, how do you square that with the seemingly overarching give first mentality in the Boulder tech scene? Do you feel like that's a real thing? Is it lip service? Is it just sort of...
It's hard for me to know because I think, you know, I think it's a really good question that you're asking about, you know, what am I seeing as kind of the gap from here's the rhetoric. And when you're saying give first, I honestly didn't know that was part of the Boulder tech community is like give first. I think that's what I've shown up to try and do and give. And that's why I like giving to Women Who Start Up and the Boulder chapter, the Denver chapter, being part of the rallies, that kind of thing. And how can I give and finding a place to give? I think that's very congruent. I think, you know, is there a difference between what I feel and what people are putting out? I think sometimes, yeah. I think sometimes there's that feeling of there's a select few. At the same time, you know, none of us chose this. And so I definitely want to have people, when they hear me, understand that I show up, I stand up, I'm not backing away from anything. That's, you know, that's part of the entrepreneurial spirit. And you're a pioneer, you're an innovator. And how do we listen to each other? How do we support each other in ways that are meaningful? And that's meaningful to different people. And just because you walk into a room and you don't resonate with somebody, that doesn't mean that we're incongruent. It just means maybe that, oh, that I'm not your people. But when 20 people are having the same reaction, then I think that's, you're beginning to say, well, then maybe I'm not. Maybe it's not just a one-off or a two-off. And I think it's how people think about, how do I welcome? How do I give first? Do I give people a shot? I really appreciate this shot that somebody said, hey, Marcy, why don't you would be great to do this. And I'm like, that's great. Thank you. Because you don't always know who to ask. And it's not always about raising your hand, you know, multiple times. Sometimes people just need to, you know, say, hey, would be great. So who do you include and who are you shoulder tapping? And is that representative? Only you know that. I don't know. But I really appreciate this. I do appreciate the community. I think that there's so many things that in Boulder Startup Week are are incredibly important for people to take advantage of. So I think this is a great service that everybody is doing, and they're giving it because they want to, because they know that this is a way to give.
And what are you most looking forward to this startup week, and what are you hoping to get out of it?
You know, I think the thing for me is always the motivation is going to sessions and hearing people's stories about, you know, how they've overcome challenges. And I think the other thing is meeting people. A lot of times the sessions, because the format has been, you know, either a person speaking up at the front or a panel, and it's basically, they're not workshops. So I'm not looking to get skills. That's, you know, a lot of times they're going to give you like, here's how you go to fundraise. Okay. So it's a download, you're taking it, and then you're going and you're trying to network. And I think the networking is so critical. So those are the things that I've taken away from it, that I'm understanding that that's what people really do, is that they just want to, you know, mix, mingle, and connect.
Excellent. Anything you'd like to add?
You know, I'm very appreciative for the privilege to chat with you, to do the work that we do, because there are many people who want to be entrepreneurs who don't do that, or who don't have the financial means to do that, or it's a really challenging road. And I would always want to be someone that, if you're in that place where you need support or help, I'd be happy to support, listen, because that's what we need to do. And I think it goes back to your thought of give first. And that's what I'd like to be part of the community for.
Marcy Tucker from 99 Agree, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joel.
That was Marcy Tucker, founder and CEO of 99 Agree. Learn more at 99agree.com and follow Marcy on Twitter at Dr. M.S. Tucker. Episode number 37 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week Adventure Track sponsor, Brand Zuka. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Honey, Matter, and Zayo. We're also supported by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's ECCODEK. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.